Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
What's the matter? Don't you like books?
Oh, I like them fine. But a computer takes less space.
A computer, huh? I got one of these in my office. Contains all the precedents. A synthesis of all the great legal decisions written throughout time. I never use it.
Why not?
I've got my own system. Books, young man. Books, thousands of them. If time wasn't so important, I'd show you something. My library. Thousands of books.
What would be the point?
This is where the law is. Not in that homogenized, pasteurized, synthesized. Do you want to know the law? The ancient concepts in their own language? Learn the intent of the men who wrote them? From Moses to the tribunal of Alpha 3? Books.
You have to be either an obsessive crackpot who's escaped from his keeper or a Samuel T. Coghlan attorney at law.
Right on both counts. Need a lawyer?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, that's a good one. That's my favorite.
What do you think of this noise?
It's totally
boys?
Star Trek.
You guys
that's
digging
the
this
sound
noise,
of Star
boys?
Trek.
Dan, you
it's
like
the essence
sound?
Of Star Trek?
Yeah, that's the sound of Star Trek essence floating about.
This is good
for
noise.
The essence of Star Trek sound. Is it the penis?
Okay, can we start the podcast?
Yeah,
well, you're the one who
you
was playing
say,
sounds,
you can't
Patrick.
Say penis on the podcast, so we have to edit that part out.
All right. YouTube will demonetize us.
De-penisify us.
Oh, no.
No. Oh, no. That's a horrible...
No, de-penis.
All right. We'll just get started. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hi there.
Hello.
Good evening. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I think people listen in the morning too.
Well, yeah, of course they listen to the morning. We're recording in the evening. We've got the vibe of an evening
it's
program.
Like the nighttime,
even if you're listening in the morning.
It's almost the morning.
Even if you're rolling out of bed and turning on the old It's Got Star Trek podcast to get to brighten up your day or to start your commute. It's got an evening vibe to it. Kind of like how in Pulp Fiction, when they call the wolf, it's like 9:30 in the morning, but he's at a cocktail party.
Yeah.
He's in the coat. He's in the bedroom where everyone's got their coats because he needs to take a phone call because he's at a cocktail party in the morning.
And there was quite a few people at that party.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast is basically the Winston Wolf of the Star Trek podcast universe.
That is true.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Spock. And we are proud to not only welcome you to the podcast more generally, but specifically to the 188th episode of the podcast. 188th episode of the podcast. And
the court is now in session.
And yes, thank you, Dan, for gathering all those cleverly appropriate clips and playing them at precisely the right moment. Yeah. Okay, episode 188.
Yeah!
Jesus fucking Christ.
Loud, dude. That was loud.
Okay, we have a few announcements before we start our discussion.
Okay.
Announcement number one. Next week, we will... I know we still have to do this week, but... Before we do this week, we're giving an announcement about next week, next week we start our coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2. And with the first episode,
ma'am.
What?
What are you doing?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So next week.
Yes, ma'am.
Next week.
Objection.
Hey, can I have that clip so I can play that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Sustained.
Okay. Announcement number one is next week we start our coverage of Strange New Worlds.
Ensign James T. Kirk.
We hand selected this week's episode, which happens to be Star Trek: The Original Series.
You did the right thing.
Court-martial. We selected this partly because, or basically because we think that there are going to be some, maybe not direct references, but at least sort of flavor references to this episode, as well as to other episodes in which somebody was put on trial in Star Trek. But
well, I had to see it to believe it.
But in the second, in Strange New Worlds, season 2, episode 2, which is titled Ad Astra Per Aspera.
As far as you go, sir.
I believe that is going to be the whole court case with one of the characters on that show. And we saw from a preview that they have mimicked the dress uniforms that we see in tonight's episode, Court Martial from TOS.
That's tight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that should be pretty cool. It's one reason why we selected Court Martial for this week.
Affirmative.
But next week is going to be Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
That is impossible.
No, okay. No, it's going to be just fine. It's going to be just fine, Dan. Okay.
I'm half Vulcanian. Vulcanian.
Announcement.
Speculate.
Announcement number 2.
How many times does he say Vulcanian?
A lot.
It happens.
A lot. Vulcanians
do not speculate.
We'll get to that. Okay, but announcement number 2 is if you are keen on some additional preparation for Strange New Worlds, everyone should go check out the excellent interview or multiple interviews that the Open Pike Night people did. What?
Oh, no, continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your plug to Open Pike Night.
Because Open Pike Night, they interviewed the whole bridge crew, everybody, Anson Mount, everybody. It's in podcast form, but it's also on YouTube.
Well, I had to see it to believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can see it. It's on YouTube.
Search
Open Pike on YouTube or go, you know, any of their websites or whatever. You can find all the links to that stuff. But definitely check it out. Really cool interviews with so much of the cast. They also will be doing weekly coverage along with a lot of other folks. So there's going to be no shortage of excellent opportunities for fans to enjoy podcasts and interacting with the podcast host and all that other good stuff over the next number of weeks.
Checkmate.
So that was announcement number 2. Now,
announcement number 3.
Finally, I'm just eager to get to this analysis of Court Martial, but we have the final announcement. Announcement number 3 is that we will be covering all the episodes of Strange New Worlds, as is typical of us, as is typical of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
But there's a catch.
There is a catch. It's like catch. Is that?
I beg your pardon.
Is that Jesse and I are happen to be headed to Europe.
That is impossible.
On a fact-finding mission for a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing some heavy research into sausagery and sausages and sausagery. Primarily in Austria. Dan isn't coming because he is, of course, as we all know, a world-renowned expert on sausagery. So
he doesn't need to go.
It would be a waste of...
He's already been to sausage school.
A waste of his efforts. But yeah, so for a couple of weeks, we are going to be out of pocket.
School worse.
So.
That's actually what I was interrupting you about before.
So we can explain that bit. Okay. Yeah.
Good work.
The whole point of announcement number 3 is we're going to be out of pocket for those 2 weeks. So here's the schedule. We're going to do Strange New Worlds episode, season 2, episode 1. Boom. No problem. That's going to be A-okay on schedule. Everyone can be excited about that. However, the following 2 weeks, we are recording a 2-part discussion of, you guessed it, Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock.
I beg your pardon.
Which we've been looking forward to talking about for quite some time. So you'll get those episodes over those 2 weeks. And then when we return, we will spit out some like sort of rapid clip.
We've done one movie already.
We've done Star Trek 6. Okay. So this will be the second Star Trek movie.
We never talked about Star Trek 2.
No. Not a focused podcast.
I just did that in a dream.
But then we'll get back. We'll discuss. We'll provide provide all of y'all audio all discussion y'all. Of Star Trek Strange New Worlds episodes 2 and 3. They may be in an embriefened form,
a big meaty podcast,
but they will be provided. And then when it comes to Star Trek, Strange New Worlds episode, Star Trek Strange New Worlds season 2 episode 4, we'll be right back on schedule. You won't even notice anything different at that point. So
it'll be seamless.
Now
it will be seamless.
That's all been explained. Now that whole chunk there is going to be utterly useless to people listening into the in the future. Because
it will have already happened.
People who aren't interested in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which I think is probably a...
Because there won't be anybody listening in the future. That's the problem.
Why did you do that?
I think the AI will listen to podcasts. Everyone talks about the AI and they're all like, oh, we're training the AI on our on our internet data. No, the AI is digging that. The AI is having slurping that up and having a good time. The AI's job, the scientists created the AI and then sat it down and said, your job is to read the internet.
Yeah.
Just go out and have fun. So the AI is hanging out on Wikipedia.
Oh, it is now in session.
And, and all that jazz, is from Netflix and all that, slurping up all that stuff. Okay. All right. I think we've gotten through the primary... Announcements.
That's as far as you go.
Some
sir.
Scary premonitions, perhaps.
Okay.
I'm going a little overboard with the sound effects.
What, you are?
With the sound sprinkling.
Since when?
Since now. I'm just like peppering everything with sound effects.
I'm going to use my mouth sounds and sprinkle all over the microphone.
You got some kind of Tangelo or Apriconius
it's
or something.
It's a halo.
What is that? Is that what that thing is called? It's a halo orange?
That's the company. That's the name of the company.
Yeah, but it's their own like breed of citrus whatever.
Tangerinos.
Clementine.
We live in a peculiar time.
I was saying that I'm sort of like going a little bit like manic with these sound effects. I realized as I'm playing them, I'm like, I'm playing a lot of sound effects.
Oh, so that's your own judgment. What if other people think you're not playing enough sound effects?
Well, then just let me know and I can keep
you're
going.
About to be like, fuck this. I'm not wrong. Whatever I do is right. Too many notes.
Like
good old Amadeus. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Oh, we're going to go to his home.
Yeah, we'll go to his house and be all like, yo.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, right.
And whatnot. Okay. Star Trek TOS. Season 1, episode 20.
Court is now in session.
Court martial. Yes, that is now an appropriate clip because we are now
official
in session.
Inquiry will determine whether a general court martial is in order.
They don't have a Commodore too often in Star Trek.
That in TOS, they had them a fair amount, and then they kind of went away.
It's cool.
Yeah. I do like the Commodore.
Like Geordi was a Commodore in Picard.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And there was Commodore O, I think, or something.
They had that Commodore 64, I think.
There aren't a lot of episodes where someone from the crew has to order a crew person to their death. They did it. They approached that. I know it wasn't the point of the episode of the fact that Kirk had to, you know, order Finney to death. But, and I guess technically he didn't because
It
wasn't quite the same because I guess the idea was he pressed red alert, signaling to Finney that it was time to go. And then, like, you know, so I guess it wasn't quite the ordering to
the difference is ordering somebody on a suicide mission, like in that simulated version of the test with Troy taking the command test, when she realized she had to murder Geordi LaForge.
And holographic Geordi looked so sad.
He looked so sad. He was like, okay,
all
right, I'll go die horribly with like radiation burns, plasma burns.
Plasma burns.
It wasn't quite like that, but it was an interesting episode. It's intense. It's a talky episode.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk is a stoic badass for most of the episode. Not all of the plot or legal stuff quite holds together.
Was goofy.
The lawyer dude's pretty funny.
Oh, Cogley was great. He's classic. He's a classic character.
Yeah.
We can debate some of his philosophies when the time comes.
Mr. Cogley.
There was some of the court stuff. For example, there was the whole speculation accusation. There was a part where Shaw was saying, like, how can you dispute the finding of the log? Spock says, I don't dispute it. I merely state it's wrong. She's like, on what do you base that statement? Spock says, I know the captain. He is in. And then she interrupts and says, please instruct the witnesses not to speculate. And that's when, you know, Spock goes,
I am half Vulcanian.
But then, so she's accusing him of speculating. It's like, fair enough. Okay, whatever.
I don't know that then she speculates later. Like with McCoy, she's basically just
exactly.
Like
all those
up.
Dudes have already decided that, like, that Kirk killed that dude on purpose. Like,
so,
everybody's all, like, quick to judge already. Like, yeah, he totally killed that guy on purpose.
So, yeah, that's that was exactly the point I was getting to, Patrick, was the when she goes, psychologically, doctor, is it possible that Lieutenant Finney blamed Kirk for the incident? And he's like, it's possible. And she says, he could have hated Kirk through the years, blamed him, blah, 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 for promotion, blamed him for being given command that he wanted or whatever. Correct. And McCoy keeps being like, he could have. And she's like, now let us hypothesize, doctor. Mm-hmm. Is it normal for a person to return affection for hatred? So she's asking him to speculate. In this instance, and not only that, it's kind of like an obnoxious like accusation. Yeah. It's like, because this guy's an mm-hmm. asshole, that means that my proper response is to be an asshole back. Therefore, I'm guilty of being an asshole. So right. I'm doomed. So by nature, the fact that I'm human, I'm automatically an asshole. And then, then later, Cogley's like, could that have had an effect on the visual playback we saw when referencing the whole chess argument, which mm-hmm. is weird too. And she's like, object. The witness could be making a conclusion, and then. Stone agreed with her there. So there she's accusing Cogley of making a conclusion because he's talking about the chess game having an effect on the visual playback. And this is after she already like asked for the doctor to hypothesize, which was after she got on Spock's case for hypothesize. It was all weird.
You are
courts martial are usually stacked
doing a good analysis
in favor of the prosecution. That's sort of the whole deal.
Do you think that Lieutenant Shaw is Captain Liam Shaw's grandma?
I was wondering about that.
Do you think he called her Meemaw growing up?
Hey, Meemaw.
Meemaw?
Maybe it could have been like a grand Meemaw.
Oh,
great grand Meemaw.
Here's a legal question. When Shaw says
none of us are attorneys.
When Shaw said,
qualified to answer the question that you're about to pose.
No, well, I'm not necessarily posing it to any of you. I'm just to anyone who cares to ponder it. Sometimes my questions are less questions and more statements in the form of a question, which I know is an annoying thing to do, but it's like one of those sake of argument.
It's not necessarily an annoying thing to do.
It's like all those philosophical straw men sort of, that's the right word for it, right? When like, was it Plato who's always doing those kinds of things where he was talking to like a fake crowd that he wrote?
He was like,
write some shit where he'd argue with himself and always win his own arguments against some kind of schmuck that he decided to, I think that's a straw man. Anyways.
No, straw man is a slight variation on that. A straw man is when you're arguing a point was not brought up by the person you're actually debating with.
Yeah, I guess
you've invented an argument that they have not used.
It's a cousin. I'm going to call it because it.
I think it is a cousin.
Because when you don't
know. It's a philosophical
when something
cousin.
Doesn't directly relate in the way you thought it to, but it kind of feels like it should, it means it's their cousin.
Word.
Okay.
Feels like it should.
Wait, okay.
Anybody at home wants to rewind that, there's probably, I don't remember. Verbatim, what Dan just
object.
Said.
But he said something about how cousins feel like they should.
but whatever he said, I imagine there's a great deal to unpack there.
Objection.
Okay,
all
right.
I beg your pardon.
Anyways.
Was that your legal? No, you haven't asked your legal question
my
yet.
My legal question. When I was talking about Cogley said about the chess game and the relation to the video, Cogley goes, could that have had an effect on the visual playback we saw? And Shaw goes, object. The witness would be making a conclusion. And then Stone says, sustained. But then the way Cogley fixes his question is he asks the same question, except he adds the word hypothetically to the beginning of it. He says, hypothetically, if blah, 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 blah. So, and apparently in a court of law, if you ask someone to speculate and you're objected for it and you're sustained.
In a Starfleet military court.
All you have to do is add the word hypothetically speaking to the beginning of it. And then you win your argument. The other, which leads me to the point, though, about, I mean, unless you all want to make any specific points right here.
I mean, you're like a fucking roller coaster right there. Well, I do not want to stand in front of it. Okay, so. Your question, Dan.
My point now. I've moved on from the question.
Okay.
So this whole thing,
and now is this new thing.
This whole thing about
you're gonna get to the point.
How the chess thing was related to the video thing. So maybe this is a question, or if anyone has any insight on this. So it says. She goes. I think it was Cogley. Someone said this. Someone either accidentally or
it's not important.
Somebody.
Words have identical meaning regardless of which character stated them. What those characters' motivations may have been.
It was Spock, apparently. So he goes, someone either accidentally or deliberately adjusted the programming and therefore the memory banks of the computer.
Referencing, I think that was Spock.
Yeah. Referencing the chess game because Spock knew that the chess game was rigged or that was fucked up somehow because he shouldn't have been able to beat it. He should have only, by logic, should only stalemate. Have been able to stalemate it each time. As a quick aside, Kirk
Kirk, which is a hilarious way to play chess.
Kirk, did Kirk not imply that he always beat Spock in chess?
He did imply that. Yeah. Kirk is always portrayed as very book smart and clever in certain ways.
Yeah, he goes, you may be able to beat your next captain at, he goes, it's not all, you may be able to beat your next captain at chess. So Kirk should have been the one programming the chess thing, not Spock, but that's neither here nor there.
That's a good point.
But it's interesting that Kirk can beat Spock at chess. All
right, so what you're kind of alluding to,
but
I think
Spock's the kind of guy that would play himself at chess.
There's a lot of pieces to this episode, and again, entertaining episode. Okay, go ahead, because I think what you're getting at is that some of these things don't make sense,
right? Okay,
and so the way to make them make sense, in my opinion, is a 1960s lack of understanding of computational science, such that they're inelegantly stating, okay, I believe they're inelegantly stating that, what's his name? Lieutenant Scary Face.
Finney?
Yes, Finney. that he deliberately edited the logs to frame Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
But the problem is the way the lines are spoken is unclear whether he edited the log specifically or just did something wacky to the computer so the computer did all sorts of crazy stuff and just happened.
It looks like he just pulled out some cables in a Jeffries.
Well, one presumes that the whole point, like if you're working backwards, and this is where some parts of this plot fall apart a little bit. If you're working backwards from the plot, Finney did he know about this storm coming up? Did he know it was going to get to red alert level?
Okay, we're moving on to the next subject, and I just have to get this point out. I apologize. Because you're basically, yes, that would be a good summation of it, of what's going on here. What he said is, Spock saying someone messed with the chess game. Cogley goes, could that have had an effect on the visual playback we saw? Okay, so he's saying that adjusting the chess game could have had an effect on the visual
playback. Is he saying the chess game or just the computers? I thought my understanding was that he wasn't saying somebody messed with the chess game. It was somebody messed with the computer upon which the chess game is working.
It affected the chess
game. And because they messed with the computer and because the writers of this episode have an inartful understanding of computational science, they believed that if you mess around with something, it'll make everything go crazy.
So that makes sense, because what I was looking at, I was saying like the cause was the chess game modification, the effect was the videos getting changed, but you're saying that it's like it's just all part of, he was just fucking around and he didn't know and he caused some side effects.
He was like, you saw what Kirk, he went into a Jeffries tube and like rearranged some cables. Like that's what that dude did.
And the thing is I come to these conclusions because
it was amateurish.
They're the only way to sort of wrestle any sort of sense into this plot line, which still has some holes in it. Because again, did Finney know that they were going to be in a situation where he could fake his death, or did he fake his death just because it was like, hey, I got a chance to fake my death?
He's like, wait a minute.
Which is confusing. I can finally get that Kirk. Because Kirk, if Kirk jettisoned the pod, so what this means is that Finney was like, oh shit, we're in danger. What I'll do is I'll leave the pod early. Well, I'm saying maybe he was abandoning his post, and then Kirk jettisons the pod, and then Finney is like, oh, I can get back at Kirk now. And I've been mad at Kirk, but I guess I haven't told Kirk.
So it was just a fortuitous situation for Finney. It wasn't premeditated.
It's a little confusing as to where, but he had enough skill to modify.
They modified videos. Not just the record, the video of itself, which I guess you could say would not be that difficult because you could just make one light blink sooner than all you would have to do to doctor that video is to make a light blink.
Well,
but still,
in the year 2023, you just gotta like ask Adobe Premiere with the AI plugin to be like, oh yeah, just change that.
Yeah,
shit.
But we have internet though, and they don't.
That's so true.
I mean, all rules are off.
It's a fair point.
Yeah.
But there are a few things surrounding the whole plot. Again, was it something he did because he just happened to have the chance to? I guess so. I guess that makes sense because it doesn't seem like he plotted the actual dangerous storm.
We
right?
do know he was a third-rate officer that was jealous of Kirk.
There's also this whole issue.
But all those guys liked him better than Kirk.
Well, they were giving Kirk some shit, yeah.
They were really, for some reason, it was like everybody was just Kirk, you totally did that shit.
And Kirk was, he was so composed throughout the whole thing. Yeah, like,
he was composed through
like
this
pro.
Whole fucking episode. Yeah. This is like
they
a
were jealous
Kirk is sort
of
Kirk. Badass. He's just totally serious the whole time.
This was, everybody's was like, now they're going to get that Kirk and we don't have to like compete with this asshole anymore.
So I did feel,
they were just
I mean,
jealous of Kirk.
Kirk
is, he's totally awesome.
If I were Kirk and the problem is, you know, they don't really have a lot of follow-up, certainly not on this topic, but I would like to see Kirk for the rest of the original series, like, run into these guys occasionally and be like, fuck you.
I know, it's like, hey.
Fuck you, you didn't believe me. You believe the goddamn computer over me?
Yeah.
What kind of friends are you? What kind of colleagues are you?
They were really being
it's
a,
like, hey,
being
I'm the captain of the Enterprise. What are you the captain of?
Yeah.
The Intrepid.
The New Jersey. The captain of the New Jersey.
Yeah, I guess it went on to... did some good things.
It was in the museum.
In the Picard. Picard season 3.
Well, it was the only one hanging around.
Now. All right. Oh, yes. But
Delaware got blown up.
A couple other things on the Finney business, right? So his daughter is understandably upset. It wasn't clear to me whether his daughter lived on Enterprise or not. Probably not, because in Kirk's era, the Enterprise did not generally have family aboard. Mm-hmm. That was a change made in the Next Generation years and onward.
Yeah, so, where did that girl come from?
So presumably they somehow scuttled this girl to the starbase. yes.
Yeah, it seems like there was just like a movement against Kirk and they were just kind of plotting.
But
there you are.
But the thing about... This girl is first she's screaming at Kirk, mm-hmm. you know, understandably. She's mm-hmm. upset and she perceives him to be the cause of her father's death. All right. Mm-hmm. But then, not long after, she's all coming into Kirk's lawyer's office and
reporters
being all like, well, I guess it's Kirk's place and saying,
I thought
like,
that was going to lead somewhere, but it didn't really lead anywhere. Her
there's
whole...
a whole bunch that doesn't lead anywhere.
He's all like touching her shoulders and so
yeah, 1960s.
I know. What an awful time.
Yeah, put a little girl in there. They would surround her with a bunch of old dudes.
Oh, really old dudes.
This is what the family audience wants to see. Mm-hmm. But she then says, I learned from mother and all the letters dad sent home to mother about Captain Kirk, about how much he loved Captain Kirk. So I now know he didn't do it on purpose. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. But like,
I don't know what, like,
when did those letters stop? Like, basically, when did Finney's grudge start? Did it start way back when, years ago?
Confusing.
And it just continued onward, even as Kirk gave him a spot on the Enterprise and all that other stuff. I'm just confused as to like how long has this grudge been
happening?
Seems
like Finney almost blew up a fucking ship. So like, come on.
And did he have like a nervous break? Like towards the end, it really looked like he was having a total
that
nervous
guy was
breakdown.
Whack, dude. He was crazy. He was totally crazy.
He
had crazy eyes. He was like,
he was doing
he
some
was
like
all sweating.
Evil mastermind plotting and stuff like that.
I love the service more than any man ever dared.
He was not convincing as a good captain.
But you're wrong.
Because he kept saying, look, I'd be a better captain than you. And
it seems like they would have already caught him on some kind of psychological, you know, problems. He would have been flagged. And
yeah, I mean,
been in counseling.
There's
Section 44.
Just with the Finney plot alone, we can talk about the court case stuff in a little bit, but all that Finney stuff, it's weird because overall, I did really enjoy the episode. I think there's punctuated bits of very kind of interesting stuff.
I was pretty entertained for whatever reason. I'm not even really sure why I was entertained.
Partly,
like,
I think Shatner's stoic Kirk, it was pretty excellent to watch. Mm-hmm. I think it had some of that classic Spock and Bones and various combinations of people, you know, Cogley's in here trying to help save the day and save their friend.
No Scotty.
And very few of the other crew.
This was one of my favorite Finney lines.
I'm a good officer, as good as you.
As good as you.
As good as you.
As good as you. The episode also had a pretty awesome sci-fi, definitely for the time, sci-fi conclusion that for this sort of like little murder mystery stuff was fun with the whole heartbeat business, right? Mm. And you watch this episode and you realize, oh, that's you. Other shows have kind of done variations on that sort of solution, and who knows? Maybe these authors got it from somewhere else.
Check out this heartbeat
sound. Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes, it is similar, you know, evocative of Edgar Allan Poe.
These are people's heartbeats.
It's like a funky bass groove.
Yeah.
Turn it down a little.
It goes on for 20 seconds. It's pretty long.
That's a good one.
It's
a good clip. It's a good long clip, Dan.
Well, you know what they call me. You know what they don't call me.
Well, you know what they you don't like to be called.
They don't call me Daniel Short Clips.
All right. Yeah. So Dan, okay, this is just to unpack it for any new John audience members. Last week we stumbled upon the nickname Danny Long Clips for
stumble
Dan
upon
over there.
It. We crafted it
because
Dan as far as you go, sir.
Because Dan was playing a number of fairly long audio clips,
no,
Dan, you know, bristled a little bit at the at having
but the audience loved it.
Nickname assigned him, but yes, the audience loved it. In fact,
why did you do that?
It was one of our funniest podcasts.
Our friends over at Unplanned Trek put together a meme. They memeified it, and there was a whole thing with the Daniel Short Clips and Danny Long Clips. It was really funny.
Explain.
It was cracking.
Explain.
I just did explain.
Oh. I beg your pardon.
No, you don't.
So,
how about let's take a quick break.
I had a follow-up to that, so let's take a break.
We'll take a break, and then we will stream right the fuck into Dan's follow-up. It's going to be great. All right, we will be right back. Okay, we're back. Ready?
Court is now in session.
Oh. Are you just playing? You're just playing that clip again. The court is now in session. Clip.
Yeah, I really like that.
You play that every time we come back,
and when it's not even appropriate.
Okay, what's your follow up?
My follow up.
We promised the audience a follow up.
The sound. Well, and here it is.
Okay.
Whoa, what was? Were you coughing and laughing at the same time? You sounded like goofy coughing.
I'm not doing it on purpose. No, you made a funny sound with your air pockets.
I don't know.
Blisters. Air blisters.
Whatever the combination.
Air biscuits.
The combination of tubes and shit.
I beg your pardon.
Tubules.
That is impossible.
All your tubes that make sound.
No.
Your sound making tubes. You made a funny sound at the same
time. I know what I did.
When I was like breathing in, and it made me do the goofy laugh.
Why did you do that?
Why?
Okay, so so Kirk goes, gentlemen, this computer has an auditory sensor.
Gentlemen.
It can, in effect.
No women allowed on the tribunal.
Right.
They don't seem to have any women over the rank of lieutenant.
So it can, in effect, hear sounds. Their computer can hear sounds.
Okay.
Much like other devices that we have can hear sounds. They have like a...
I got some ears.
They have like a microphone?
Yeah, well, so that... So first of all,
do you mean hear as in sort of the qualia of hearing, as in the experience of hearing versus the experience of accepting and translating vibrations?
Well, I guess that's the question. are they implying that their computers
is there a sentience or a sapience behind it?
Right. So that's
all about that qualia.
So
baby.
So otherwise, like saying it can in effect hear sounds, like why didn't they just say it's a recording device unless they meant it's some kind of higher level sort of thing that we don't know about? And he goes, by installing a booster, we can increase that capability on the order of 1 to the 4th power, also known as 1.
Is this the heartbeat business?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1 to the 4th power.
1 to the 4th power.
Which is 1.
1 to the 4th power is 1.
Yes.
Is 1.
Yes. Okay, good catch.
One to the anything power.
Right? Nice catch, math boy.
Hey.
Mr. Calculator over here.
So he goes,
Commander Data.
He goes, Dr. McCoy will use this white sound device to mask out each person's heartbeat, so it'll be eliminated from the sounds we are hearing, which looks surprisingly like a microphone.
Another wacky device
but
from
it look,
Dr. McCoy.
But
it just looks like a straight-up microphone. You just said it looks surprisingly like a microphone. No, it's a fucking microphone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was being dramatic.
It's a 1960s microphone. Yeah.
So, okay, so...
I bet the guy who invented Bose... Watch this episode. He was like, white noise.
Mm-hmm. Episode.
Yeah, and then he invented the...
He invented it. Just like that guy who invented the transporter after watching Star Trek.
And the person who invented the
hoverboards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
So they needed that device to eliminate the sounds of the crew on the bridge so they could limit it down to the sounds that they wanted to hear. They could use that sound detecting, the heartbeat detector, and I'd put it up to your chest, and then we'd no longer...
The karaoke microphone.
We'd filter out your heartbeat. But then...
That was wild,
But then did you notice that when they asked, they were like, well, we got one more extraneous heartbeat. It's in the transporter room. And Spock was like, don't worry, I'll just fix that. And he just pressed a couple buttons and got rid of that heart, his heartbeat.
Yeah.
So the question is,
without the device.
Without the device. Why'd they need the device if Spock could have just pressed a couple buttons and like just erased it anyways, you know? You could say, well, it's focused on that room. It's like, well, all
maybe
of the...
Maybe they got that device in the transporter
us.
Room.
So they're grifting
you
us,
could
man.
You could make an argument that says like, well, you
this
can...
This is a literary grift.
You could make an... you could make an
they're tricking us.
You could make an argument that says, oh, they were able to... Spock was able to do that with the transporter room because he just made the transporter room leave the field of auditory sensoriness. But then why didn't they just do that on the bridge? Because like the only sound they were hearing for was off somewhere else. So I didn't think it made any sense. I didn't think it made any sense. I didn't think it made any sense.
Okay, it's got to be three. It's got to be prime number.
Prime number. But speaking of like that eureka moment, I can't remember what it was just now.
Urethra moment?
No, you had a eureka moment type thing a second ago, and I can't. It was like you were. It was. We'll play back the tape.
Eritrea.
What are you talking about?
There was something like. Oh yeah, it was that's when they invented the transporter or the no that's when Bose invented the I got it.
My favorite type of podcasting is when I just get to sit and watch Dan have a conversation with himself.
Wait a minute. That's right.
That time like a minute that one time a minute ago when Patrick said the Bose guy was listening and learned about like white noise
these
and invented
these Bose
and
Bose,
and was able to filter out and. He was able to filter out
okay
the sound
yeah
okay are we done
we're all okay. good we're
okay
just like,
so when there that's a eureka moment. Here's a eureka moment in this episode that they didn't play up as much as normally, which I appreciated. They didn't overplay this. When Kirk says, "No, it's not all bad, Mr. Spock. Who knows? You may be able to beat your next captain at chess." Kirk out, and Spock just goes, "Chess." That's the eureka moment when Spock is like, "Chess."
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Normally in a movie or show, they'd be like Spock's character would be like, "Chess, Kirk. You're a genius, chess, and then he'd run out of the room and like get into a lab coat and cook up some chemicals or something.
or play more chess.
Yeah, that's not Spock's chemicals. Style.
But that was the eureka moment when Kirk said chess, and he's like, "Oh, chess, of course." You know.
So I wanted to bring this up because this was another issue with the plot where we are presented with this dilemma where Kirk he's made a command decision. To go to Red Alert and to jettison this pod, which...
Ensign James T. Kirk.
The implication is that there's going to be bad news for the old Enterprise if they don't do this. Okay, so that's what Kirk believes he did, and that's what it turns out he did. Now, when presented with contrary evidence, somewhat justifiably, you could say, the Commodore et al., decide they've got to do some shit to be like, Kirk, we're going to try to put this under the rug.
We got to take you down
just
a
peg. Keep their reputation going. It's that kind of story at first. That story sort of goes away, right? This could have been a story about the semi-corruption of government institutions and other institutions in which the players in those institutions are perfectly willing to abrogate the actual procedure and rules in an effort to save the institution and to protect members of the institution. You got to understand, the Commodore thinks that Kirk is guilty. He sees this evidence and he's totally and justifiably convinced that Kirk is guilty. And his first thing to do
is to offer
Kirk to be like, "Oh no, it's all good. As long as you just give up your command, well, you keep your job. Yeah, everything's right. gonna be fine. You're a white guy. Mm-hmm. This is still a system that helps out you guys.
We'll just give you the New Jersey. You don't get the."
But the story doesn't end up being that. Okay, then Kirk, who everyone agree, Spock and everyone's like, he's clearly not. He's not guilty. He's not acting guilty. The audience, I don't think, ever thinks he's guilty. But so then he gets this lawyer and
Samuel T.
Coghlan, who is a hilarious, cool, awesome, stereotypical or whatever, archetypo
something.
He was he studied the law. He didn't just study like what they was on the computers summarized on the computers. He went back.
He studied like the stele of Hammurabi.
But he said it all like Hammurabi or whatever. He pronounced it weird.
He studied the law from the original word.
Justinian law.
It's like
code.
If you programmed in binary or
Alpha 3.
He was like went to the lowest level of the law. Like he didn't take that higher abstraction abstracted level of what was on the computer. He like programmed in binary. Yeah. He was like down in the guts of lawyering.
And it was utterly meaningless to the plot of this show.
Because
he doesn't actually do anything, because if we analyze his case, what his case is, what his total defense is, not to cross-examine any of the witnesses that go
up. Supposed to put across how smooth he was.
But then he puts Kirk on the stand, which generally is like, you don't do that. You don't put your client on the stand. But okay, it's a TV show.
Would you do it again?
You put Kirk on the
and
stand.
Then like, and then he's like, I'm not ready, but I'm about to get.
And then they play the tape of Kirk with the hand, the doctor tape, which shows the yellow alert. And then Samuel Ticagli, after that, his whole strategy is like, I don't fucking know what to do. And at one point he has this weird thing where he's talking to Spock and or whatever. Somebody's like,
I'm half Vulcanian.
Do you know how to like defend Kirk? And he's all like, I'm starting to.
Yeah.
But then the next day in court, he's like, no, my case rests.
We got
no fucking clue. Nice. And it's Spock who helps out, and then Cogley does the whole theatrical stuff, but he didn't come up with that idea.
And at one point he actually thought Kirk might have been guilty at one point.
When he saw the video,
so he didn't.
Computers don't lie.
Why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
Why? Why?
You're building a nice little collection there, Dan.
Why?
Star Trek universe.
Those are short clips.
Cross time and space.
What if I dedicated my whole life to collecting sound clips from every Star Trek episode? Then I'd have this library and I could put it online and everyone would love me forever. Finally, I would get love from those who don't give it to me.
You can see it so clearly. And you're so 100%.
Well, I have to see it to believe it.
You're so 100% correct. And yet, I don't think you're going to do it. I think you're going to stick to the regular old things that you're doing right now.
Oh, man. What, did you just call me, like, mediocre?
Mediocre!
You can talk plainer than that.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all, Dan. You're quite the fine specimen, I must say.
That's as far as you go.
I could go even further. You're a tip-top chap. Cogley.
Do we want to hear, he's all like talking about...
I want to hear some of his business.
Human to talk about.
Yeah. All right, so this is a 20-second clip of all the rights.
Rights, sir. Human rights. The Bible. The Code of Hammurabi.
Hammurabi.
And of Justinian.
Human rights.
Magna Carta. The Constitution of the United States.
Human rights.
Fundamental declarations of the Martian colonies.
Human rights?
Yeah. Statutes of Alpha 3.
I don't know how human many rights were in the Code
Alpha
of 3, Boston.
You know, Alpha 3 is probably some lizard people.
Yeah, like Martian.
I don't know how many rights were in the Code
rights.
Of Boston.
What
was the end?
These documents.
Alpha 3.
Speak of rights.
Alpha 3.
So he's talking about
these documents.
Martian,
Martian rights.
Martian.
Read about that in the Expanse novels.
So
that's right.
Why was he? So he's talking about human rights, but then he brings Martians into it. Now, if he said people rights, that would be okay, but Martians.
I think it's the humans that colonize.
Yeah.
So it's not Martians.
You're lawyering me now, Jesse.
I'm not lawyering you.
You're lawyering me now, Jesse.
I don't think that counts as lawyering.
Why did you do that?
So to get back to sort of my original arc, this wasn't an episode purely
Chief O'Brien.
This was not an episode primarily about sort of the pseudo corruption of institutional organizations.
Right.
This was not an episode about Cogley winning the court case by making a profound argument.
Mr. Cogley.
He does make a profound argument about the idea of being able to cross-examine your accuser. And this exact line of thinking has been used in various jurisdictions against things like, for example, red light cameras or speeding cameras.
Oh yeah, I was thinking like that was pretty prescient.
It was prescient.
Yeah,
because
the whole like you compute. But then there's a whole shadiness he goes into, the little at odds with TNG sort of when Cogley's talking about the right. Oh, this is the part you're talking about.
Elevating the rights of
the
computer.
The rights. Cogley says the rights of cross-examination, but most importantly, the right to be confronted by the witnesses against him, a right to which my client has been denied. He goes on to say, and I repeat, I speak of rights. A machine has none. A man must. My client has the right to face his accuser. And if you do not grant him that right, you have brought us down to the level of the machine. Indeed, you have elevated that machine above us. Data would disagree.
Well,
as with
okay,
the measure of a man.
But Data's a different kind of machine than the kind of machine there.
Not according to Pulaski.
Well, she was clearly wrong, and nobody likes Pulaski.
So. And that's why she went away.
They
brought back Crusher.
She moved in with Riker's dad. What was Riker's dad's name? Like Cal Riker or something? He had some silly name like that. Kevin Riker.
Kevin Riker.
Killarney. No, what was his name? I can't remember. Vlad Riker.
Vlad.
Nah.
It's dead.
I'll remember
I've killed it.
Steve.
Steve Riker. It's definitely not that. I'll remember it after we finish recording, no doubt. And it'll be all aggravated about it. I think it's Ken or no, it's Clive. God damn.
You're damn right.
I don't even know where how we got there. But oh yeah. So it is definitely a different than what TNG argues later, even though, yes, I agree, they are, Dan, they are different types of computers.
Yeah.
It's not quite the
same
thing.
No, you agree
thing.
With Jesse.
No, I agree with both of you.
No, but you said, I agree, Dan, that they're both different types of computer. That's a point Jesse made.
Oh,
because
did Jesse make that point?
Because even in TNG, the Data is different than the computer.
Yeah,
There's the positronic brain business.
Positronic, discotronic. But
technotronic.
Technotronic.
But that's not the argument that actually wins. It's a passionate argument, but it doesn't win the day, right? Because he still would be found guilty if it was just based off of this evidence. It's not until the whole Spock business, figuring out that something's goofy with the computer, sort of semi-inexplicably, the computer has been altered in some way, that leads them... now, this is when the writers start doing this whole, like,
do not speculate.
Hiding the information from the audience thing, because now Spock is whispering into Cogley's ear, and then Cogley's all like, okay, we're going to go to the bridge, and we're going to do some goofy stuff on the bridge of the Enterprise. And then so they have a little discussion there, and then they're all like, okay, now we're going to actually, they go to the conference room first, and then they're all like, okay, now we're all going to go to the bridge, like a fucking field trip. Where they're just tooling around the ship. And then it comes down to sort of a Columbo moment, except instead of Columbo, it's like Spock working in tandem with Cogley, who is doing all the dramatic stuff, but it really seems like Spock is the kind of the one who came up with all this stuff.
Totally. Mr. Cogley.
I am half Vulcanian.
So, yeah, in that sense, the episode is sort of uneven.
Yeah, Spock sort of saves the day, as usual. Cogley, what did Cogley really...
Cogley was...
He was just there to be entertaining.
Dramatic. He was entertaining. He had an odd philosophy about books. I like books.
No, but but his philosophy about books made sense in the sense that, like I was saying earlier, he studies law on a lower level. He doesn't... Because he was specifically saying what's on the computer
It's identical information provided in a more convenient format.
No, what he was implying was that... The computer, what was on the computer was sort of a summation of what was on the books. He says it's homogenized, I can't remember the words he used, pasteurized or something. I don't know,
but I can only take it from the literal reality of it, which is it's perfectly easy to type in the words into the computer, so the words are identical, information's identical.
Okay, this is the line. It says, this is where the law is, not in that homogenized, pasteurized synthesizer. So what I took from that was that what was in the computer wasn't verbatim of what was in the books. It was all sort of summated
I didn't take that. I took it just at him being like an asshole.
Well, which is why I was making...
Because it's ludicrous that they wouldn't have copies of everything in the computer.
Okay, but that's why I was saying it was kind of like a lower level viewing of the law, like kind of like programming binary, because
he was naming all the standard
shit. Because you're not depending on somebody else's summation. You're getting at the words as they were originally written, but you're saying that no, it doesn't make sense that they would summarize the words into a computer, but like, why not? Sure, why not?
Why would they not have a copy of the Magna Carta in the computer?
But
or the Bible, or the Hammurabi.
You can read that. None of us get to read the Magna Carta in the original language. We wouldn't be able to understand
what
it in
I took
the original
it is there were so many laws that they just made, had an express Cliff's Notes versions for all the lawyers because they got all the good stuff. And he went past that. He went to the part that a bunch of law scholars got together and were like, these are the important bits.
I agree with that.
And it passed by committee.
All of that I agree with. The only thing I think is silly is that it has to be in book form and he beams in thousands of fucking books and just
throws
them all over the thing.
Like library of books.
It was very dramatic.
Well, I had to see it to believe.
It was fun for dramatic effect. It was just a little silly to be like, oh yeah, this book is going to be helpful for your case. I would be nervous. I would be like, oh shit, my lawyer is fucking nuts because you can get all these books. He didn't have to beam them all into my shit. This guy's a rascal. Now, that being said, I like Cogley. I think he was a very entertaining guy. He's very smart, tenacious. I love the gag at the end where Cogley takes up the defense of Finney. I think that was cool.
Kirk was a little too professional about his romantic relate. He compartmentalized too much because Shaw was like, of course, you know, Shaw was like, you know, because obviously they had a thing going prior to this, right? And Shaw was like, I'm the one who's got to do it. And so it's like, I get it.
You're referring when she explained to him that she was going to be prosecuting his case?
Exactly. And I don't know what other perverted thing you were thinking, but that's not what I was
thinking. No, I wasn't thinking of it. I just was clarifying because the way you phrased it was, I'm the one who's going to have to do it. And then you did a funny thing with your hands where you're like, I don't know. I guess I'm the one who's going to have to do it.
Hang it down, dad. Ananda! What? So she was like, I'm just going to do my job and what jobs are for, and it doesn't matter what's going on between you and me, but we got this job to do.
What I was going to say is that
that's an appropriate thing for her to do, of course. But right afterwards, they're immediately back like, oh, she's like, I'm glad I lost. He's like, yeah, let's make out.
You know? And it was like right in front of everybody on the bridge.
That's my
like
favorite thing. My favorite part of the whole episode is they frame the whole thing.
It was like Arrested Development episode.
Exactly. It was like Arrested Development where they frame it where they're all private and they're having this private conversation. Then they make out and then the camera pans back to the whole fucking bridge crew.
So
fucking hilarious. That was great.
Like, showed like the camera. Camera crew.
If I were Kirk, I don't care how awesome Kirk is. If I were Kirk, and maybe this is why I'm not Kirk. This is the one reason why I am not Kirk.
This was the reason?
Is because I would have to take a few days. I'd need to take a breather and be
to make out with the prosecutor?
No, to take a few... No, to take...
No, I honestly thought that's what you meant.
Well, let me... No, I'm getting to that.
Okay, all right.
He's not a predator.
No, I would need to take a few days and because I'd still be mad at her. I know it's that she was just doing her job and I totally respect her, but there'd be emotions that at play. It's like I couldn't shake from my head. There'd be a whole thing where like, I know you were doing your job. I know you were just doing the right thing, but I can't help these feelings I have. I'm so mad right now. I'll make out with you, but just give me 5 days. Just give me five days alone. Then I'll come back and make out with you in front of everyone later.
This has echoes in other parts of Star Trek. Most similarly to Measure of a Man, in which Riker has to act as the prosecutor against Data. And that's crazy. That's a clear conflict of interest. I was watching this episode with my wife.
You're damn right.
I was watching this episode with my wife, and she was saying, wait a second, they clearly slept together in the past. Is this not a conflict of interest?
There's that too.
I was like, yes, except in Star Trek, in the world of Star Trek, they're actually making the point that these people are so professional, Riker and Shaw, and other examples in Star Trek where there's a similar situation in which people who knew each other had to, you know, I think, you know,
they can just flip a switch.
They're so professional that everyone is fully confident that they will do their job.
Are they fully functional?
Not everyone's fully functional. That's why you got Dr. McCoy.
Data's fully functional.
Dr. McCoy, he's got the hypospray that can help out.
Did you notice?
Because, you know, sometimes you just all shagged out.
McCoy is like the stereotypical bass player of the rock band, because like the way he hit on Shaw at the beginning, he was like, I'm friends with Captain Kirk. was how he was going to get an in. He's like, yeah, I don't got my, I'm just McCoy.
And if you notice, McCoy, when he found out and quickly sussed out that she was a past flame of Kirk's, it didn't stop him from thinking like, well, maybe I can still sleep with her.
He's going to be smooth if he can be smooth.
But I applaud.
And Dax said he has those.
He got nice hands.
His surgeon's fingers or whatever, doctor's fingers.
Who does?
Delicate fingers.
Was, Dax, Jadzia Dax, implied on an episode of Trials and Tribulations that McCoy...
You sound like you were saying Charles in Charge.
I did not.
Trials and Tribulations kind of sounds like Charles in Charge. Trials and Tribulations.
Charles Trip Tucker III.
To Paul. No,
Dax said that McCoy, she had a relationship with McCoy, and something about him having surgeon's hands or fingers.
Yeah,
a couple of Daxes ago.
He implied that there was some sort of professional, non-professional.
It was the diddling. It was a couple of Daxes before.
It was a few Daxes previous. It wasn't Jadzia. Jadzia was recounting a memory from a previous host.
It was a female Dax.
If McCoy was fiddling around with Jadzia, that would be a problem.
That'd be some serious,
serious problem.
Okay, so to summarize what we were just talking about, I think I applaud the ability of people in the future to be able to flip that switch from professionalism to personal, to be like, you just tried to have me fucking like kicked out of Starfleet, now we can be lovers again, you know? And I like I said, I get it. I would, my emotions would just be running a little hot at that
moment. I thought it was lame.
Wouldn't be mad at her. I would understand that it's something that I would need to get over on my own personal
journey. I think it's important, as always.
I would just need a few days.
There's always that reminder that, you know, art is a reflection of the time in which it's made.
Yep.
And there are certain things
She's a very good lawyer.
Certain philosophies that they put forward that no doubt sounded sort of a proto version of progressive or whatever.
Totally.
But that don't quite rise up to
it. Still doesn't make it.
Right. And I think...
Still doesn't make it.
And I think my view is that by the way, this is not just Star Trek TOS. Star Trek up to the current day will often espouse a certain philosophy that we're not going to agree with necessarily with every philosophy that they put forward, and they're often conflicting. Star Trek contradicts itself. It is not a unified ideology that is totally internally coherent, and that's fine. Okay, I will explain. And what I mean by that is a couple of things in this episode. First of all, we already touched on it, but the whole like human versus computer business, I think it was an interesting discussion, but it was very much leaning on the whole like humans are good, computers are bad. Here's how like computers are potentially a problem.
I like computers.
Now, the points they made were good, but I think it was a little bit simplistic and, as Dan noted, very human-centric, specifically human, in a show with a bunch of aliens that are also sentient and have rights. So that was...
Right, sir.
That was an aspect. Whole Cogley business with the books, again, I was like, I don't think, you know, in TNG, they're not going to be arguing that... You should have a bunch of books around. The TNG, they argue that, sometimes some books, it's nice to have I think what a lot of people today think, which is like, books are fun. It's nice to have a book. But, you know, there's ebooks too, and it depends on your mood, the vibe is.
I still think it was just a summary of the laws, and he was getting at the real truth of the laws. By virtue of the fact that they're books. I just think that a committee of lawyer scholars got together and summarized a bunch of books into a computer.
But I trust...
Like into an application, like an app on your phone.
Yes, but
except they don't have smartphones, but they have tablets. But they have tricorders.
I don't think there would be any difference in
tricorders are different than communicators.
But I trust my
friend. Our tricorders and communicators
are the same. I trust that you will allow for the scenario that I may form an opinion based off of a previous opinion and conclusion that I've made.
That is impossible.
No, I've made a conclusion that differs from yours, and because my conclusion about the computer database is slightly different, my opinion and reaction to it is also going to be different. And so that's why it's important that we get down to the old brass tacks.
To the nitty gritty.
No.
Yeah. No. Yes. Yeah.
You're wrong.
I am not wrong, sir. I'm infallible.
Well, speaking of, you were talking earlier about how the show shifted around in terms of what the point of the episode was going to be, right?
Yes. The writers it was not consistent thematically.
So the last 10 minutes of the show, I'm sorry, I'm watching Jesse intently.
He's going to sneeze.
He's got a case of the sneezles.
I'm Mr. Sneezy.
Sneezles.
Yep.
Jesse's got sneezles. Jesse's got sneezles.
All right.
So the last 10 minutes was like its own thing altogether. It turned into some kind of weird, like, there was that fucking awesome fist fight that was clearly had a stunt double playing. The top of the hair was all fluffy.
Hilarious stunt double, obvious stunt, both of them stunt doubles for the other actor. Jesse's
allergic. Why did you do that?
Jesse's allergic to your bullshit.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh my god.
All right.
So
it's got my nose.
Stunt business.
Stunks. So the stunt double, the Kirk stunt double had poofy hair.
Poofy.
It was obviously poofy. They didn't even try to like hide their faces. And if you watch, you notice that the Kirk's torn uniform was more torn than the stunt double's torn uniform. Kirk's torn uniform was like over his shoulder. He exposed his shoulder.
Well, because he's got those sexy Canadian shoulders.
Yeah, the stunt double didn't expose his shoulders. So I think they did that on purpose. I bet
the
William
best
Shatner,
shoulders come out of Toronto.
I bet William Shatner.
Toronto, Ontario.
I bet William Shatner and everyone in the room was like, we got to expose these shoulders.
The shoulder capital of North America.
But that was quite a fight that happened there. And then and then there was all this like
it's from swimming in the lakes.
Yeah. Swimming in the lakes.
It's from going up and down to the CN Tower on a ladder.
The where?
The CN Tower.
Yeah,
in Toronto, Ontario.
The Toronto Tower.
It's though. Like way bigger than the Space Needle. It's great. Yeah. Go up to the CN Tower.
It's a monster.
Go up all the way to the top.
All so
the top. Look out over Lake Ontario.
So
a beautiful view of one of the Great Lakes. Some people argue it's the greatest of the Great Lakes.
What? Who says that?
It's like the smallest, isn't it?
I don't have enough experience with the Great Lakes to register or form an opinion.
Well, you got to have an opinion.
I don't have to have an opinion.
I don't think you have to.
There are many things that I can remain neutral on. I can vouch for Lake Ontario being a pretty awesome lake.
Yeah.
I don't know how great it is in relation to the other lakes because
well, the other ones are bigger.
I haven't been to the other lakes. I haven't been to the old Lake Huron
it's
or
like Superior
Lake Michigan or like well Lake Superior when one would presume.
Huron is quite large also.
Wow.
Can
we take a break, Dan?
Yeah, I was going to talk about the subject.
Usually when we get onto Great Lakes talk, it's got Great Lakes.
Well, I was just going to
indicate that one or more of us might have
it's
to pee.
Got time to breaks.
I was going to talk about the echoey dialogue.
Echoey dialogue? All right. When we get back, Dan has promised us to talk about the echoey dialogue.
I will be providing the echoes.
Some people find it peculiar that we have breaks when we're a podcast. Because it's a podcast and it's not like on TV or nothing or on the radio, but we don't know that. Maybe we're on the radio right now.
You're wrong.
No, like in the future.
We don't know what's going on.
They need to have like a place to put the commercials and they squeeze the commercials in there.
Maybe this is the future.
And then when they go to commercial, you want to entice the audience to come back after commercial. So you have to promise things like that Dan is going to be. What are you going to be talking about, Dan?
Beaten and sobbing, Sinny told me where he had sabotaged the prime.
Sabotage.
All right. Dan's going to talk about echoey audio when we get back in just a moment. But until then, we will. We will be right back.
Right back.
Sabotage.
All right, we're back from the break. Isn't that great? We're ready to close out this discussion of Star Trek TOS season 1, episode 20.
So this is a very
court martial. The first episode in a long time on this podcast that has more than one word. We had five episodes in a word. That's 5 weeks of episodes that were, the titles were one word. That's absurd.
Would you do it again?
No. I would want to mix in like Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night or Chain of Command or something. There's all sorts of things that we could put in there that had more than one word. But anyway.
Charge, culpable negligent.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, but it's not. That's not on me. That's on the universe and your algorithm.
You did the right thing.
This court is now in session.
Okay, so I forgot that now we're really back.
Yeah,
that signifies that we have returned. Okay, so you were saying something about echoey dialogue.
Okay, so we have
Echo the Dolphin.
So Finney was talking, and when he first talked, for some reason his voice was all echoey. He was like,
"The great Captain Kirk."
Was it because he was talking on the intercom?
Well, then he goes,
"Hello, Captain."
Yeah, that's also on the intercom.
Right. But then when Kirk said,
"Ben,"
why was that echoey? He was just in the room.
You know, very good point. I have no fucking clue. These people are maniacs.
They are absolute maniacs.
Editing error.
Hey, Charlie, there's a problem here. There's an inconsistency. Why is Kirk echoey and the other guy's not, you know, the other guy's echoey, but Kirk's not echoey?
Charlie.
Don't worry about it. These people, they don't.
I'm a good officer.
They don't care. Yeah. They just want to watch some Star Trek. They just want to watch Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk's William Shatner stunt double fight another guy's stunt double. That's what they want to see.
So this is a 10-second clip.
These are going to be on 19-inch tiny little TVs. Color TVs. 12-inch color TVs in the mall window. That's when people are going to be watching this show in the window in the shop on the corner where they sell the 6-inch color TVs.
You can talk plainer than that.
What's he talking about?
I don't know. No fucking idea. This 10-second clip, because this TOS,
okay. TOS
has sound.
Okay, Dan, coming off very defensive here. I'm looking forward to whatever it is you're about to present.
So
you're providing us with foundational information.
TOS, and I imagine it's the case with a lot of shows back then, the sound...
tinny.
Well, I was going to say
it's a bit tinny.
It's obvious when they make cuts and insert, you know, when it sounds like they recorded
analog.
They recorded different things in different recording sessions
and they cut it and put it together in the same splicing.
Yeah. So this one I found particularly, I don't know if it'll come across, but I was listening to this over and over again, and I think there's at least two places where it sounded like they changed, like they cut the tape together in a weird way, and it's not because it sounds like jerpy.
Do you have a long clip?
I beg your pardon.
This sounds more like a medium clip because he said it was 10 seconds.
So
medium clips.
It's not that the audio sounds
Dan medium clips. That doesn't work.
It doesn't. It's not that the sound
Dan mezzo clips.
It's not that
intermediate.
It's not that the sound is jumpy. It's that the quality changes. Here we go. You gotta be quiet for this one.
Mike, you helped me all along, kept me down, robbed me of my own command.
Oh.
I'm a good officer, as good as you. I've watched you for years.
So, yeah, right in the middle there.
Did the camera switch to him, see a visual of him at that moment?
What I was wondering.
I would guess that, but I don't know that.
Your hand gestures.
This is an audio.
Now you're making Patrick's making the hand gestures. He would point at me, he's like, "That would guess." And then when he said guess, he pointed at his own forehead. And then
I would guess. I point at me.
Your forehead.
And then I point at you.
Well, no, you did the point at me where you point off to the side, but you put your arm.
You knew I meant you.
Yeah, you're like your fist was going in my direction, but you were pointing 45 degrees.
I was polite enough.
I don't think it was
plausible deniability.
I don't think it wasn't a camera switch because he was talking over the speaker the whole time. So why would it even matter? Why would there be echoes then?
I don't know, Dan. Make very good points, and I think you've enriched the lives of myself, Jesse, and everyone else who's listening to this program.
Here's when they reverse the log.
I like that.
Stop!
I imagine that was the sort of thing that would have blown people's minds in 1966. Mm-hmm. Somebody's sitting there watching TV and they'd be like, "Holy fucking shit, did you just see that?"
There are, you gotta say one thing about TOS, I think it has, of all the Star Trek series, the superior music music blurps, like the music splats.
Oh, yeah.
They've got good music splats.
Yeah. There was this, I like the
I hope
one.
You play my favorite one.
That one?
No. I mean, that's a bell, which, by the way, I bet we'll see that in Strange New Worlds. Yeah.
That was cool. I like that.
They didn't play it quite as often in the TV show as we're playing it now, but it was fun.
Was it this one?
No, I do like that one, but it was... It was something to Samuel T. Coghlan said, and then afterwards... I forget what it, damn it, I didn't write that down. But he says something and then it's all like, Dan! It just seemed like a little more dramatic than it needed to be.
I actually know what you're talking about and I can't remember the line, but he said something like, I think so, or something. Yeah, he said something really like anticlimactic. Sort of
Yeah.
Let's see. There was the this is the court entrance hit. That was the court entrance. It was all ponderous. Here's the romantic endish music. Whoops, no, that's not it. This is it.
Yeah. When we still think it's just Kirk and Shaw, yeah, Lieutenant right. Shaw alone on the bridge of the Enterprise.
And then this was at the very end when it was all fun and playful. I love when Star Trek does this.
Yeah.
It sounds like I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
It's the same band. And the Desi Lu band.
And I like, this one was one of my favorites.
I have to do my very best to have you slap down hard.
That was...
there was some fairly overt sexual innuendo in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not just necessarily for the period. TOS and TNG, I think, were both really good with the playful music. TOS even better than TNG, but TNG had some good playful music too. Mm-hmm. Not to denigrate the playful music of the rest of the shows. They had good playful music too, but it wasn't quite as charming. It wasn't quite as campy. Mm-hmm. And we haven't lost all of the camp in Star Trek, and Strange New Worlds did some good campy stuff last season. But it's been a long time since we've had some of that good old fashioned earnest camp like you get on.
Ernest goes to camp.
Like the camp that Ernest went to?
Ernest goes to camp.
Not Ernest P. Worrell going to camp.
I'm half Vulcanian.
Ernest P. Worrell may be half Vulcanian as well.
That would explain a lot.
Do you want to hear all the dialogue for that?
From the whole episode?
From the whole episode?
This is a new feature we're providing. Get an audio version of the episode. Dan takes out all the uncomfortable silences.
No, this is the ensign being questioned at the stand. This is all of her dialogue put together.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Ensign James T. Kirk. Ensign James T. Kirk. Yes, ma'am. Ensign James T. Kirk.
Kirk.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Any more of those quotes?
No. Can you guess this audio?
It sounds like Finney's daughter. And it sounds like when she's screaming at Kirk, maybe? Is that when she's screaming at Kirk?
Yep, you murderer, you got it.
I got it.
What about this one?
The duty roster.
Well, there's not much mystery to that. That's Kirk talking about the duty roster.
I just wanted to say duty roster.
You didn't like when people say duty.
The duty roster.
This is the type of thing that attracts the one-star ratings.
In the course of your duties. In the course of your duties.
The duty roster.
Why Finney?
His name was at the top of the duty roster.
He blamed you.
He may have blamed me that he never rose to command a ship, but I don't assign jobs on the basis of who blames me. It was Finney's turn, and I assigned him.
And I assigned him.
This is the last question.
Talopoff.
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 Oh, that's a good one.
This Talopoff.
Is an advanced level one. You got any guesses, Jesse?
Talopoff.
Sounds like a vodka.
It does.
Talopoff.
Or an astronaut or a cosmonaut.
Talopoff.
Oh, yeah. Or just someone with that last name.
Sergei Talopoff.
Talopoff.
Like Sergei. He's Talopoff.
Talopoff.
He's a member of Starfleet, but still has communist Russian attitude from Soviet Union.
I'm a good officer, as good as you.
Talopoff.
I'm a good officer, as good as you.
Do you give up?
I do give up.
Well, I had to see it to believe it.
Explain.
You're about to lop off the captain's professional head, and you're sitting here playing chess with a computer.
To lop off his professional head.
To lop off.
I'll play it.
Well, I had to see it to believe it.
Explain.
You're about to lop off the captain's profession.
Yep, to lop off.
It's a good reminder, of course, that the stakes here, they were high, but they were not, no one's going to die or anything like that. It was Kirk's professional career and sort of the honor of the innocent that was at risk here.
My father.
My mother. All right, so you said that was the last one of your secret code words?
Those are my last secret code words.
Cool.
Neat. Cool. Where do we go from there? I don't really know.
I don't know, man. No, what else was there about this episode? We talked about the ending. We talked about
I'll tell you what you found. Nothing, right?
Cogley stuff.
Kirk had a lot of, like, old-timey, like... Because everyone always talks about, you know, William Shatner's, like, delivery and stuff like this. But he had, like, he sounded like a 1940s dude a lot. Like, this line.
I'll tell you what you found. Nothing, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And then there was this one.
So that's the way we do it now. Sweep it under the rug and me along with it.
That sounds like some kind of like 19 old timey 1940s.
No, I agree with you. And I think another thing to buttress that point was okay, I said buttress.
I wouldn't even think about that.
was it point that got you off? Did you get off at point? Dan looked legitimately offended. He was like, wait, what?
You talk too plainly. Please talk less plainly.
I demand it.
What I was saying was that McCoy's exchange with Shaw, his initial exchange with Shaw.
Exchange? It was exchange?
No, his exchange.
You said exchange? Exchange? Well,
exchange.
Exchange. Stains?
Exchange.
His exchange.
His exchange.
His exchange.
McCoy's initial exchange.
That's as far as you go, sir.
With Lieutenant Shaw was also very 1940s movie style.
Oh,
that
yeah.
kind of rapid back and forth, you know, and he's got that great line where he's like, all my friends look like doctors, all of his look like you.
Yeah.
that was a pretty sexy line. I mean, it was a line.
It was indeed Captain. If you have any doubt, that was indeed Captain James Kirk of Enterprise.
That was indeed.
That was indeed.
Do you have the other line where he talks about the sexier line?
No, unfortunately.
You have the sexier line?
I had to stop somewhere. I didn't think it would be that applicable.
I suppose it's understandable that you must be judicious in your application of the slicing machine.
I was already like not...
The audio slicing machine.
I wasn't very judicious in this episode, and I was really starting to be like, I gotta like say no to some of these things. Like, for example, I recorded this for some reason.
4 years, 7 months, and an odd number of days.
Like, why did I record that?
And that's another 40s line.
Yeah.
And an odd number of days. Not that I'm counting.
Oh, right. Yeah. Answering of a rhetorical question like that. Yeah, that's totally like what they do in old movies.
Rhetorical question? What are you talking about?
It was a rhetorical question.
Which was?
How long has it been?
Yeah.
It's a question that does not require a precise answer.
Well, I know what the fucking definition of rhetorical is.
That was the rhetorical question.
I wasn't suggesting you didn't know what a rhetorical question is. I was just explaining the context to this specific question. Okay.
That's impossible.
1940s.
Okay.
Any other business? Any other business with this episode?
Well, that's kind of a weak way to sabotage the Enterprise.
You mean just yanking a bunch of wires out?
Yanking a bunch of wires and like messing with the orbit. It's going to fall out of orbit.
Wait, what? Do what?
They were falling out of orbit.
No, what was Kirk doing?
What was Kirk doing?
I think he's prompting you so he can play something, but you have to say the password that you don't know. But you, whatever. So you said something that would have prompted it, but he didn't click it in time, so now I have to say it again. Dan's looking at you.
Stuff.
No, the opposite of fixing.
Sabotage.
Okay, there we go. All right.
Thank God.
Sabotage.
I was really worried for a second that we were going
to... I honestly thought Dan was going to jump over the table and fucking strangle your ass to death.
That's the kind of thing, it just seems like it's very easy to fix. Even like if Kirk didn't fix it, like somebody else would. It's the Enterprise. Okay, somebody on the Enterprise is
smart
enough. They beamed
everybody off. That was the funny part. Okay, so you bring up an excellent point, Jesse, because the whole plausibility of this end bit, which is that Finney sabotages the Enterprise in such a way that, yes, the orbit is decaying, but also, for some reason, they can't beam off the ship or beam more people on the ship or send shuttle up or use tractor beams or something like there's
sabotage.
It's very convenient that they create this threat that, by the way, nobody seems threatened. Except for Finney. Finney is the only one who's like, oh my God, my daughter's on board.
Yeah, right. I don't know about that whole bringing their daughter on board to get involved in that. That seems like, shady.
And by the way,
she's probably already fucked up as it is. Like, well, that's going to, I mean, like, not be, I'm saying, not through any fault of her own. Put me in her place and I would be fucked up too. She didn't behave like, she was doing everything a reasonable person would do.
Okay, well, agreed. In addition to that, we again have to sort of work backwards from what's presented on screen to figure out what people's ideas and motivations are.
Human to talk about.
So Cogley.
Clangley.
Cogley.
Cogley's
Cogs. He says he's got to run an errand. We find out that this errand is to go retrieve the daughter.
Mr. Cogley.
And bring her onto the ship. Now, presumably the only reason they did this was because they knew or suspected that Finney was going to sabotage the ship and that they wanted to make him feel bad about it, or get him to reverse the problem by having his daughter on the ship and she was going to die too.
What was he going to do?
Well,
sabotage.
So, you know, it's like, what? Really? That was why they were going to bring the daughter. They were going to put the daughter's life at risk. It just, the threat didn't seem to be there at the end. At no point did it really seem like the Enterprise was actually in any danger, because again, they're going to beam people on, off, et cetera.
Well, there was a moment that I found questionable that they did put someone in danger. Speaking of putting things in danger, because you were just talking about putting things in danger.
Yes.
You with me so far?
Yes.
When
danger.
When Kirk is all being like
Danger Mouse.
When Kirk and Finney are all like confronting each other or whatever.
Okay.
Hanson.
Oh no.
No, I was in
that. You're gonna play the thing?
I wish I would have remembered to do that. Like, but I didn't even realize
people do like that. People like the whole Hanson thing.
Yeah, I know. But
people
like
were fans of that.
They were fans of that.
But that was a Star Trek Picard season 3 thing. Mm. Not a Star Trek TOS season 1 thing.
No. It all wasn't. Right.
But you're talking about Hanson.
Wow, I wish I'd remembered that. Okay. Well, and Hanson,
you're the one who brought up Hanson.
I didn't even realize I brought up Hanson until this
second. I mean, there's people listening that don't even know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
You just keep saying Hanson.
You just keep
referring obliquely to this Hanson thing.
It was on one of those episodes of Picard.
Man, we've given you so much time to search this. Like, what the fuck is going on?
I know, right? Like, what can we possibly do to vamp anymore?
You got a screw loose, Dan.
Hanson?
What?
Hanson?
What are you talking about?
I said Hanson. Isn't that the trigger? I'm trying to be a good boy and play the trigger word.
I'm trying
word.
To be a good boy.
I just don't want to get in trouble.
The Hanson trigger.
That sounds like a Tom Clancy novel. Out next month. The Hanson trigger. Even though Tom Clancy's been dead for years, there's going to be a new Tom Clancy book.
Yeah.
So is Hanson.
Hey, Hanson.
Okay.
Hanson to biochemistry lab.
That was way too long.
Hanson.
It took too, way too long, and this bit is way too
Hanson
long.
Commander Hanson, go make sure that those manual locks are off.
He sounds like he has a cold in that clip.
Commander Hanson.
Alright.
Hanson the Forge always calls me Commander 7.
You had to get the end bit.
Okay. First, I will reiterate my minor critique of that it should have ended with something having to do with 7 and not with Hanson.
I agree with you. I never changed it, and I probably should.
I personally justify the inclusion of that clip based off of the headcanon assumption that Captain Liam Shaw from Star Trek Picard season 3 is related to is related to Lieutenant Shaw from this episode.
Okay.
Is that what we're going with? Hanson. We're going with that.
Wow, that we really took a long walk. And we got to the point where we had to play it.
It became necessary to play.
But the problem was it was way too late. And so, but like at that point we had to play it simply to close that end. It's like it's already over. It's already not it's already fucked up, but you have to
just
play
to
it.
Pull back the podcast curtain a little bit for the audience. Yes, our primary goal is to inform and entertain. Yes, 100%. But occasionally these things come up where those two goals have to be put to the wayside, and our obsessive needs must be assuaged. We must assuage our needs.
What do they call that?
We must sate ourselves and have the prime numbers and the even numbers or odd numbers, whatever you're into.
What is it? It's like the fallacy of lost buckos or something. Like,
dude,
what
you're just making some shit up.
Like when you gamble and you lose a bunch of money, so you gamble more because you've already sunken cost fallacy.
Yeah, cost fallacy.
We were in a sunk cost fallacy.
What did you
right
call
there?
It? The fallacy of lost sunkos?
Lost buckos.
Buckos. Yes, sunk cost fallacy.
Because we've gotten so deep in it that like at that point we were like, we have to, and we're still talking about
you
it.
You could argue that is an example of the sunk cost fallacy. I would argue that it isn't because of the whole meta entertainment that's derived from it.
Sure.
I mean, I know that it's not appropriate for us to mention that should be a conclusion that is drawn within the mind of the audience member.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made a bit of a podcasting faux pas by calling it out, but just for the purpose of this debate, I thought that was necessary. Okay.
All right. So,
Catherine,
so,
you were talking about Hanson.
I should play the song. I won't do it. Now you're waiting for me to.
No,
so Hanson goes, Mr. Spock, we're running out of time. This is when Spock and Kirk and Finney are facing off. And then Spock goes, gentlemen, if you'll please hurry to the transporter room, because Spock wants to go save Kirk. And Stone motherfucker goes, Mr. Spock, the court has not yet reached a verdict. We will hear the witness out. And Spock's like, very well. The witness? Like, is he still a witness? Technically he's a witness, but Kirk's life is at risk. Shouldn't that matter more than a witness's testimony?
Yeah.
He's treating it like a witness testimony.
I thought that was silly.
Yeah, like, then that related to what you were saying, because you were talking about bringing Jamie aboard. Was it supposed to like be, you know, something about dangerous stuff? And I was just thinking like that was a really odd way to get the witness's testimony. It's like, well, let's put Kirk's life at risk. Yeah. Let him fight it out, and maybe he'll reveal something. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I like the heartbeat part, because even though, yes, partly that was dramatic, that's also a perfectly legitimate experiment to run. Now, you could argue that the ship's internal sensors, probably you could just scan around and figure out where Finney is.
Well,
but obviously in the context of this episode.
Oh, yeah, they can do that in TNG. They're just like, where's Captain Moobledoo?
Yeah,
Moobledoo.
Right.
Okay, so we'll just take it for granted that they can't, in this context,
Captain
they can't
Moobledoo.
So I liked all the heartbeat stuff. It was just sort of like, you didn't need anything beyond, like, the court case was over.
Yeah.
It was over when it was clear that the crime that Kirk was being accused of did not occur. And the extra dramatics were for the sake of the television program and not for Captain Kirk.
And the other guy was the actual criminal.
Yes. Finney was the actual criminal, and I guess he's going to jail. Some Federation penal colony in New Zealand or wherever they put them in this stage.
Did you notice that when Spock,
I am half Vulcanian,
sat down, and then I noticed that other people did too, when they sat down, when they were witness testimony, they put their hand on that light
little
thing.
Truth-telling
was
thing?
Was it a truth light?
It was a lie detector.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was some kind of future Bible.
Space Bible.
It was a space Bible, you swear, which it is, because it's a truth detector, and that's the what code, the Bible is the,
No,
to
no,
be.
It was a copy of the Code of Hammurabi.
The Ten Commandments.
Did you notice that when McCoy sat down, his legs were all crossed, sexy McCoy style?
Also, McCoy, the computer didn't say McCoy's name. The computer said it began with Captain Kirk's name and his rank. It begins with Spock's name and his rank, but they just went straight to McCoy's rank. They didn't say his name.
Did they have Spock's full name, Steve Spock?
No.
Because Spock's his last name.
Oh, really? His first name is
Stephen Q.
He is
Spock.
Half human.
Yeah. He's half human, so he gets a human first name. His name is Steve.
His mom was from Ohio.
I beg your pardon.
Yes. The computer. I did like the bit where the computer kept reading out all of Kirk's citations. Although, honestly, it's another example of like, that's what point does that have in a court case? How many commendations a guy has means he's like not going to be
James T. Kirk.
A criminal. I don't mind them reading them out, because sure, I guess that could influence you one way or another in terms of whether or not he would make this sort of mistake, but I don't know, anyone can make a mistake. All right,
well, the full list of commendations.
Yes, let's hear the full list of Kirk commendations.
So there was the palm leaf of Axanar peace mission, the grand kite order of tactics, class of excellence, Prantaris ribbon of commendation, classes first and second. That's when Cogley's like, let's not rush this, you know, play them all, because they were going to come. Let's not rush it. Let's just play them all. You know, we're in no rush. And then he goes, awards of valor, medal of honor, silver palm with cluster, Starfleet citation for conspicuous gallantry, Karagite order of heroism. And then like Cogley flips and he goes, well, let's not hold up too much. Right. No, he's being all, his whole thing is like pretending to be all, he's all style, it seems.
Yeah.
That the whole book
totally.
Thing, you know? But those were all Kirk's medal of honors, and then here's some.
Well, it wasn't all of them.
Mr. Spock.
Whoops, that's not.
As a first officer, you know a great deal about computers, don't you?
Oh, that was different.
I know everything about them.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was a funny statement. You know a lot about computers.
I have an Amiga.
Whoa.
Spock, serial number S
179-276.
The computer says Spock and not fuck, right?
Spock. Serial number
S179-276. It just glitched. Hold on.
Spock.
Spock.
Serial number
S179-276. I think you're just having a little bit too much fun over there, Dan.
I forgot that this one doesn't start it over when you click on it multiple times. The other one does start it over.
By one, you're referring to software. Software you're utilizing.
Affirmative.
All right. Any final thoughts before we close up shop? Because I think it's about time. We go. Okay. So we'll do all the back matter. And the back matter consists of us providing social media stuff. So you can find us at It's Got Star Trek all over the place. Twitter, Mastodon, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube.
Objection.
And now, very recently, Blue Sky Social at It's Got Star Trek. So you can follow us over there
about them.
If you're already over there. So, you can check out all our social media. You can check out our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Yes, ma'am.
And as a very brief reminder, our upcoming schedule is as follows. Star Trek, Strange New World, Season 2, Episode 1.
Did you just burp, Jesse?
Then we're doing two episodes on Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. Then mini episodes on Star Trek Strange New World Season 2, Episodes 2 and 3. And then Season 2, Episode 4 and onward. We're going to continue through the summer. It's going to be wild. There's going to be so much stuff going on.
The humidity is going to be out of control.
To be fair, Jesse, that is location dependent. This is an international podcast. There are many places where the humidity will be
sometimes
either comfortable,
dry as a bone,
or much too dry. There are places that are much too dry, and you have
a
humidifier. So that'll do it for us this week. Until next week, we wish you all the best. Goodbye.
Bye.
She's a very good lawyer.
Obviously. Indeed, she is.